Did not get enough time to run the 7-day rule and it did not apply their mind. So the message has come that for tomorrow we're not going to have a debate. Today's time has it on the 24th. But then I don't know what the impact will be on the days. Even talking to the 1st of April and for the bill goes to the president. But we'll see after this meeting because I only got this message now. We'll revert back to you as we teach you Mr. Roche of what is going to happen. If it indeed it ends that way, because we're going to have a long day, we might have the briefing, because we'll still have to go section by section with the bill, and we might then arrange another day for that. So it will be the briefing and the engagement. But then we'll confirm that after this meeting, when we've discussed with the powers that be. As a committee, I'm sure we'll be meeting even the acting DG for the first time. So we'll introduce ourselves. I'll start from my left. Honorable Bafunani, I will introduce from this side towards my right.
Morning, thank you. My name is Bafunani Arunabuli
from the
Pacific.
Morning, I am
Matsabari Khan
from
Yoko Pokabu. Madam, my name is Colin Magina from the Lapa.
I'm Tumsani Kamete from Wazili Natal and chair of this committee.
Good day, everyone. My name is Chopeka Mtileni. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. My name is Dave Abraham from Kaukin.
From the members, we only have one apology, Honorable Fan Lingen from the Eastern Cape. But others will be joining us. I'm sure we can then continue with the introduction.
Thank you. I'm Lan Doctor. I'm the acting Director General for the Department of Education Industry since the 1st of January. The presentation this morning, thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, for allowing us to do this presentation. The presentation will be done by our Deputy Director General for Corporate Consumer Regulation, and then we have our team, a very able team that has been working through this legislation for the past 3 years. Just by way of a very quick introduction, Mr. Chairman, on in terms of the company's amendment, the Principal Act, the Companies Act number 1971, was passed by Parliament in 2008, and it was supposed to take effect from 1st October 2010. What then transpired was a number of issues raised by stakeholders, by business, the banking sector, number of different players who firstly requested a postponement of the coming into effect of the Companies Act, and also sought a certain amendment be made. For that reason, that the minister granted a further 6 month extension, and that is why the new effective date is supposed to be 1st of April. And just to say that all of the concerns has been addressed over the past 12 months. There's been a range of inputs from different sectors, meetings with all stakeholders, extensive debate and discussion. So in terms of this amendment, one of our preeminent attorneys or experts, Michael Katz, has also indicated clearly that this piece of legislation, and I mean, we'll take it through to you, but it's in his words, probably one of the best pieces of legislation in the world, and that from his understanding, the business has worked through the issues and they are already to do with them. So in terms of the real economy side, we've worked extensively with the business, and as I said, the minister granted the 6-month extension to BUSA in October last year. Then just finally, Mr. Chairman, as I indicated, in terms of GTI's broader strategic plan, as I indicated last week, we have different legs of the GTI. I mean, we have our main focus is industrial development, economic growth, economic transformation, but also the most very important leg is to provide an effective and efficient regulatory environment for the functioning of the private sector. The private sector is the lifeblood of our economy and our country, and we must ensure that there are fair rules in place for people to conduct business. So this act, the former act was the 1973 Act, more than 35 years ago, so it is clear, it was clearly necessary for us to modernize and bring the legislation up to date with current economic reality. So this is, in a sense, the principal act of overall the 1973 legislation. We believe, given the global regulatory changes, it is necessary for our companies to conduct efficiently. As I indicated, we at least have a proud record, and the legislature has a proud record. Because we put in place, for example, the Credit Act 2 years ago, we did avoid the financial crisis. None of our banks went down because of any respective regulations. So we can send our hand over to Zodwa. We'll take you through it, but again, we request that you do the factor of consideration.
Okay.
Honourable members, thank you again for the opportunity for the government to present to yourself today. So the DG has given the background, obviously, the documents, but the only thing that I also just wanted to add to is that following the passing of the Act in 2008-2009, the president did sign off in 2009 on the 9th of April. And we then started developing the regulations that should give effect to it. And the regulations have been consulted upon. The regulations are now at a stage where they will be published as soon as we are done with the process. They have been consulted with all the relevant stakeholders. We've had one-on-one meetings with stakeholders that have raised issues. And we've reached agreement with stakeholders in various areas. And I think all that is left, I think, on our side is to complete the process and implement the legislation as a department once Parliament has done with its own legislative process. Chair, I'm going to just quickly introduce the team that I'm working with, and that's a team that is known to myself, but just for the sake of, I think, informality, we'll just go again, just introduce and have them introduce themselves quickly.
Thanks, honorable members. My name is Nicholas Nistende. I'm the executive director for police and legislation.
Thank you, honorable members. My name is Rory Yala. I'm the head of legal services at the company and
institution. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Philip Turner. I'm a legal advisor at Supra.
I'm a member. My name is Pushpio. Good morning,
honorable members.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I must say that this is a team that has been working on this legislation. This is a team that normally appears in front of this committee. However, there are other members of the drafting team that are not necessarily here. Those are people like Judge Dennis Davis, who continuously provides guidance on this legislation. We also have Professor Pepo Mungano, who was the initial project manager on the corporate law reform process. are still on board. These are the people that we consult with on a daily basis in regard to the provisions that we have here. And also, Johan Spedom, our legal advisor here in Parliament, will be joining us to just assist us in this process. Members have got a copy of this document, which is a process document that outlines where this process started and up to where we are today. I think if members can just go through that, you notice that this process started in 2003. And through that process, it outlines all the consultation stages that we've gone through. It outlines all the workshops, focus workshops on various sections of the legislation, which we went through with specific stakeholders to try and ultimately agree on certain areas. It outlines all the stages of our negotiation process and network. So I think this committee should find comfort in the consultation process that we have gone through in regards to this. And we in fact pride ourselves in the department that we do not and we never miss a step in our consultation process. And I think that this document is just an indication for this committee to have a sense of how far we've gone and where do we come from. Chairperson, it is important for us to just re-emphasize again some of the key issues and some of the key features that come through in terms of this piece of legislation that was passed by the President in 2009. One of the things that this legislation seeks to bring into the sciences is ready to cut the red tape. This is what people have been complaining about. This is what we have been complaining about as government as well. And this legislation, for the first time in South Africa, is bringing about exactly that. It will cut the time it takes to register companies. It will cut the steps that a company would have to go through just in terms of having a company, maintaining a company, or developing a company. So it significantly reduces that particular process. The second aspect of it, which is also very important, which we also pride ourselves with, is that in many countries, they do best to get a framework that is flexible enough to regulate a small company to a big company without adjusting having different pieces of legislation. So in one piece of legislation, we've got a framework that is so flexible that it allows for changes that can be made, still accommodating companies of any sizes, of any category, of any nature. And I think that is something that has been, mentioned also internationally, that South Africa has managed to break through where some of the countries have invested to break through. And that is made possible particularly because of the manner in which the provisions are structured, where you've got alternable provisions, you've got non-alternable provisions, you've got MOIs, that the Memorandum of Incorporation, that could actually allow companies to make certain things specifically upfront so that they do not keep changing and amending on a regular basis, but also that they could, you know, have some flexibility to direct how they want to look like without necessarily conflicting the principal legislation as it says. The other aspect, again, that we also think it is important about this 2008 legislation is the introduction of the business rescue process, which basically replaces your judicial management process, which over the period of time is being practiced in South Africa, it actually resulted in more companies being liquidated than being turned out. So the business rescue provisions, in the manner that they are structured, they allow for companies to be restructured, reorganized, turned around, so that we do not lose the efficient assets in the economy to liquidations and all of that. And that will also bring us some achievements in regards to saving jobs and all of that. I think we need to find a way of sustaining this economy. And that intervention, for us, we see it as a very big, progressive intervention by this parliament in acting that provision. The last thing that I just need to indicate is that there are a number of governance issues that over the years, they become things that when business do them, it's like they are doing a favor to the society or to the public. They are not obligated. They are governance issues that when a company says, this is our code of ethics,
it's like a company is actually going a step forward, you know, and it's doing something that is an addition to what it's supposed to do. But actually, these are things that are inherent and should actually be a part and parcel of the operation of the company. That includes observation of human rights by companies. That includes the recognition of employment rights, because the South African law in regards to employment is very clear about the rights of employees and the extent to which they should participate in the governance of companies. And we are saying that the piece of legislation that the President signed in 2009 brings about that. And this is one thing that also in other countries they battle to actually get properly. We found the right balance, I think, in this country, and I think the sooner we start implementing that, it will be better for all of our companies who are currently looking forward to this legislation. So I'm not going to go through this first slide because I think the DG has set the tone for that and explained where it's coming from. But I think the one thing that is important to mention is that at this point, since the signing into law of this particular legislation, we've had now, I think, almost 24 months in preparation for the implementation. So we believe that given the amount of time that has been given to this process and the preparation for business and all of that, I think we are at a stage where we feel ready enough as the Department of Trade and Industry to implement as soon as Parliament is confident that we can implement. So just for the purpose of the schedule of the process that we follow. Firstly, the reason for deferring the implementation date to the 1st of April was not on the basis of the ratification process. We still maintain, and we have said that before, that the 2008 legislation as signed by the President is implementable without even this amendment coming into place. The deferment of the date by the Minister was on the basis that business requested the Minister for additional time to prepare. And that was the reason why the Minister gave that concession to say, okay, fine, they will defer the implementation date to the 1st of April, and the benefit of it is that because the Consumer Protection Act also comes into effect on the 1st of April, so it will be easier for business to start complying with two pieces of legislation that affect their operations. But what then happens is that we saw an opportunity in the Department of Trade and Industry to then correct some of the errors that we picked up as we're doing the regulation. And we still emphasize that those errors were basically errors that are arising from the your typo errors, your misalignment, cross-referencing issues. They didn't go to the substance of the legislation. And that is why we called it a rectification process, because we were rectifying those errors so that when the legislation comes into effect, seeing that we've got now another time, then that we actually could get the amendment to be done so that when the legislation comes into force, then it will come into force with those amendments in place. So that is the reason why we are here. These are the areas that are important, I think, for us to note. We're going to just summarize all of them in terms of what the problem was and what the intervention is now in the field that is in front of you. The issue around the domestication of foreign companies. This is one area which was a result of an omission. The section 335 of the 1973 Act provides for a mechanism where if you're a foreign company and you decide to domesticate in South Africa, you want to change and become a South African company, you don't have to deregister as a foreign company and re-register immediately, you know, like follow that process. There is a mechanism which is put in place for a company to just change the status, and so it's a separate process from your normal registration process. That also reduces the burden on those companies that want to be corporate citizens of South Africa and be incorporated in South Africa. This particular provision was meant to be transported into the new framework without any changes. However, when the bill was processed, this provision did not find itself in there. So the amendment just sought to just take it back from the 1973 Act and incorporate it in the 2008 legislation. The second aspect relates to the powers of the business rescue practitioner. When we had discussions with the bank through the banking association, they raised a concern, particularly that the powers that are in the legislation for the business rescue practitioner to cancel contracts might actually affect contracts where the banks have got security and all of those issues, and that would be an undesirable consequence. We went through a discussion, and it was clear that the intention was such that where a contract is cancelled, the business rescue practitioner will go and approach the court to have that contract cancelled. However, the bank felt that it is not clear enough in the legislation and that it could be misinterpreted. So therefore, this bill that is in front of you seeks to then clarify that, so that it is expressed that where now the business rescue practitioner has assessed the affairs of the company and finds that there are contracts that the company has, and that for this company to be turned around, this contract perhaps needs to be cancelled, then the business rescue practitioner would not necessarily just cancel them automatically. He will approach the court for an order to cancel those contracts. So that is now expressed in the legislation so that it is not unclear. We don't want to subject it to multiple interpretations. So to the extent that it wasn't clear that such process is the intention, then we made that clear. The other aspect that came through in regards to this section 136 is that section 134 of the Act does provide for the contract where there is security. But we then just wanted to align the two provisions to make sure that those provisions talk to each other so that they don't apply inconsistently. So that alignment was done in this particular process. The other aspect that was raised by business was the process in terms of the registration of external companies. That is Section 23 of our Act. The wording of Section 23 was interpreted to mean that if you're a company, an external company coming to have a meeting in South Africa, you might just be required to register as a company. You know, you'll be deemed to be doing business. I think that was the wording of it. That was how the wording was you know, came out ultimately, that it gave that impression. And that impression would have had dire consequences, I think, for the country. To say that, I mean, if an external company just merely does something as easy as a meeting in the country, then it must register as a company doing business in the country. So we wanted to put some relief there. However, it is important that we also close the gap where companies might pretend that they're just having meetings and just having some operations that are not necessarily doing business in South Africa. So we must close the gap for that. So I think we just decided to refine that provision so that it speaks exactly to the intention. The intention is that if you're an external company, you do some business in South Africa, then you will be required to register as a company in South Africa. However, if you just come in to have your meeting, to have what is the other thing for the number of, I think there's at least other questions in Italy which you can actually say. I'm just not remembering all of them. But where companies can actually, where for instance there's a loan agreement between an external company and somebody in the country, that should not immediately be seen as this company doing business in South Africa. So those are the types of things that we just thought that it does not look like we are being, you know, we are putting onerous provisions and onerous requirements to companies that are just, you know, coming to South Africa for various other things other than doing business in South Africa. So that clause was refined to give its proper meaning so that it is not misinterpreted. The other aspect that we also identified as a potential problem for interpretation was the definition of independent review. There was confusion in the sense that the Audit Profession Act does provide a definition of an audit into an independent review. However, for the purpose of the Companies Act, an independent review is something that is not an audit. It's something that is assurance, but which is of a lesser intensity than an audit. So you will have an audit where you go through auditing all the processes, the finances, the performance of a company. But an independent review is another level, a much lower type level of assurance that you can get. But we can still give you sufficient comfort in terms of the affairs of that particular company. So we just thought to ensure that the interpretation does not, result in unintended consequences. So that provision merely clarifies the definition in terms of the independent review. The other part that we also thought to address, which was also a problem, is that there was inconsistency between Section 138.1 and Section 138.2. In a sense that the Section 138.1 was making reference to a regulatory authority. However, if you go in practice, we do not have such a regulatory authority in the country, because the business rescue practitioner profession is something that is still going to grow. So there isn't a regulator for it. So we just thought to make sure that the two sections, the subsections, can actually align to each other. We see a situation where the business rescue practitioner profession will grow in as much as other professions have grown, where, for instance, when we came in with the credit regulation, with the Trade Act, we didn't have a profession that is called debt counselor or debt counselor. So that profession grows as the legislation gets to be implemented. And you find that there will be people that provide such a service who might be lawyers. You find that there are others that are not lawyers, but who might be people who are knowledgeable in business and all of that and so forth. So we think that we allow that profession to grow so that it services it. However, currently there are people that are doing turnaround for companies ethically that will actually then get into that profession and make the profession grow. The one other introduction that came with the 2008 legislation is the phasing out of the par value share system in South Africa. We seek to phase that out, particularly because there is no purpose for it anymore in this country. And also our assessment is that it makes enforcement also very difficult and impractical. So for those purposes, it was agreed by Parliament in 2008 that the par value share system will be phased out. So which means that all the shares will not have a specific par value, but would then be the value of them would be determined in the market as and when it's necessary. So now, the reading of that section for other people meant that all people who now have par value shares will be forced to convert those shares within a particular period. We think that was not necessarily the intention, and I think the legislation is clear in regard to that. However, when we had discussion with the National Treasury and SARS, they did outline to us and they explained to us where the undesirable consequence is coming from and what the implication of that would be on the tax regime. And we then agreed that to the extent that this could be interpreted to mean that there would be a forced conversion from the par value share to the non-par value share system, we then sought to clarify that. So the amendments that I initially reviewed then specifically clarify that. And the conversion would happen, but it is an optional way. What it means is that if this act comes into force, no person would be allowed to have what we call par value share going forward. However, those people that still have par value share, they've got an option to convert into the non-par value share system. However, although we would not force anybody to convert, we will be encouraging people to convert. And when they do convert without affecting the rights that are attached to those shares, then there would not be any tax implications. But if they amend or alter the rights that are attached to those shares, then there will be tax implications. So they will be dealt with as any other disposal under the company act, which will attract the tax implications. So that's what we thought to clarify here, and that has been clarified in the amendments that are in front of you. The other aspect that was raised by the bank, which was not part of the scope of the amendment. But it was raised by the bank during the public hearing in the portfolio committee. And we must say again upfront that this is the first time that this issue was raised with us throughout the entire process of consulting on this legislation. This issue has never come to the table. So we had to deal with it when we now are in this parliamentary process. However, we took time to actually just look at our own facts and research and look at our counterparts and how they've approached this issue. The issue relates to Section 11 of the Companies Act 2008, which basically says that when you register a company name, your name can include certain symbols. We've seen it happening anyway. Companies are using the S, you know, sign in the names and all of that. So all the legislation is doing is merely recognizing that when you choose a name for your company, you can actually include some symbols. And we have got a list of those symbols. It's not a very long list of symbols. So the section basically says that those symbols will be recognized in the name of a company. So what we had is that the Banking Association raised a concern that recognition of these symbols might affect their ICT system, in a sense that they might have to reconfigure the system to recognize those symbols. And they did also estimate the cost to be in the hundreds of millions for each bank to do that. We did our research just to check with our counterparts in the jurisdiction that has recently implemented this particular process in the UK, and we were told and were convinced that in fact any adjustment to the system to recognize this are not anything more than your necessary cost of compliance. So the exorbitant amounts that were put to the table, which at the time we didn't have the quantification of or the basis for, we didn't want to discount those, but to say, are the costs really as high as they're put on the table? And the feedback that we got was that the costs were not as high as they are made to be in South Africa. And so we think that, therefore, the costs that are being talked about are the necessary costs of compliance with any new piece of legislation that comes into the picture. Also, the one other aspect that was made, was put on the table by the Banking Association as well, was that it might be difficult also because the symbols might not be recognized by the system that the banks are using in terms of the transaction and all of that. We've also done a particular search, and we have received feedback from the Swiss themselves, and they indicate that their system does recognize it. And they've also given us the document that shows, this is a document that is there in your text. The document basically says to us that, in fact, the Swiss system recognizes even more symbols than the ones that we are actually in the system. So the implication that was being referred to does not arise under this process. However, as a department, we also felt that we need to allow business an opportunity in the event that they need to reconfigure the system. And we made a proposal for the deferment of Section 11 in terms of its application that we could recommend to Parliament to give business about 3 to 5 years to get ready for that particular provision. And that's the proposal that is in here, and that's the proposal that is now in the bill that is in front of us. The other aspect relates to the disqualification of directors. In the 2008 Act, there was a provision that sort of exempts directors that are owner managing their own companies. The way the director is the owner and the manager of the company, that such a director could be exempted from the disqualification. The Act basically says that if you were convicted of any offenses that have to do with dishonesty or fraud, then you'll be disqualified for a period of 5 years following your conviction or the completion of the sentence. Then it went further than to say that, however, if you are a director who is an owner-manager, then that disqualification doesn't apply to you. So we looked at that again, and we felt that that the exempting is really unnecessary and undesirable, because if you're a director of an owner-managed company, that does not mean that you do not have an impact on the economy, because you interact with the public, you interact with clients. So whatever harm that you can cause would be a harm to the public as well, and the harm to the economy. So there is no need to distinguish between the two. So we then sought to address that. And I think this was an issue that was also raised by stakeholders, that the exemption is really undesirable, because it just treats the directors differently, but the harm is actually the same. The potential harm that exists is the same. So in that regard, we then sought here to amend section 69.12 by the school, that's subsection 12. And that's the amendment that is in front of you right now. There are also debates around whether the 5-year period is sufficient. That should the person that was convicted of fraud not be disqualified from serving as a director, I mean, for the rest of their life. And that in the event that they would like to come back to the economic activity, that they must approach the court to get the court to approve that they get back. So we have looked at it from the department side of things. We've gone and looked at what the constitution of this country says. And it is clear, our constitution says that a person in that situation would be disqualified from serving in any capacity that we are talking about here, like for a period of 5 years. And so we find no reason for us as a department to recommend any longer period than what the constitution of this country provides for appointment of members. The last part that we would just to want to put to this table as well is in regards to the trapping provision. That's what we call the trapping provision. In section 5 of the Act, particularly section 5.4, the specific list of legislation which, where if there is a conflict between the Companies Act and that piece of legislation, then such a piece of legislation would prevail over the Companies Act. That includes, like, for instance, your PFMA, which is a financial control type legislation. So to the extent that there might be conflict between the PFMA and the Companies Act in regard to the area that the PFMA deals with, then the PFMA will take precedence. I think that is basically the intention, is to give guidance also to the court in the case of conflict, so that matters do not sit in the court because of the dispute or the conflict of two legislations. So it does provide guidance. So when we had discussions with the National Treasury, they had raised issues that, for instance, the Municipal Finance Instrument is a legislation that is consistent really with the PFMA, and that it is not included in that list. And also, we looked at the National Payment System Act, and we also found that there was an omission, because we didn't make reference to Section 8 of that particular legislation, because that section used to deal with areas around judicial management, which is currently dealt with under the business rescue provision. So we then proposed to Parliament to include those two pieces of legislation, which is the Municipal Finance Management Act, as well as the National Payment System Act, but to the extent that it includes Section 8 only. So it's not the entire Act that is being excluded. So those amendments, Chair, are also in there. I thought I was at the end of the presentation, but it looks like there's one, the last item, which has also caused some debate, I think, in the business circle. Section 22 of the 2008 Act prohibits reckless trading, it prohibits fraudulent trading, and further, Section 22 then said it is also prohibited for a person, for a company, to operate under insolvency consequences. And that particular phrase raised concerns in terms of what do we mean by insolvency consequences. Does this mean that a company that is technically insolvent cannot operate? And we have made it clear that a company that is technically insolvent can operate. So what then the discussion went into was to clarify exactly what is meant by insolvent circumstances. And the clarification that we agreed on is that if you're a company and you are unable to pay your debt as they want you, and you continue to trade, then you'll be trading under insolvency penalty. However, if you're a company that is technically insolvent, you will still be in a position to pay your debt. You might get a loan, you might get bridging finance, whatever, to pay your debt. So you will still be in a position to pay your debt. But that doesn't take away the fact that your liabilities exceed your assets, but you are able to meet your obligations as they fall due. So that is the distinction. So we just thought to clarify that, and that clarification now is provided in Section 22, so that the consequence that that was talked about to say this particular clause will prevent startup companies from operating, because most of them, eventually when they start operating, they sort of technically insolvent because they would be operating on finance that is borrowed and all of that. So this now makes it clear that those companies should not be affected. So a technically insolvent company would still be allowed to operate. Okay, the last part that you just wanted to address, I think, and I think we addressed it, is in regards to the state of readiness to implement this legislation. I think I've emphasized the period. We've had now 24 months. In this month, this is the 24th month, basically, since this legislation was passed. And we still feel that if you go through the provisions that are in the bill, in the amendment bill, you will see that there is absolutely nothing that changes the essence of the principal act. All of the provisions that are there are provisions that are either satisfying, addressing the inconsistency that was picked up, and also that provides greater flexibility in regards to other areas, just to make sure that the interpretation does not go wrong, especially where we know. So if you look particularly in regards to the big issue that was at stake around Section 11 in terms of the recognition of students, business has been given an opportunity of 3 years to get their systems ready for that. So that does not become a concern anymore. And also in terms of some of the other areas, it was really just clarification of the transitional arrangement, but also in regards to the forced conversion issues that we clarified, there's no forced conversion that exists. So that's basically the scope of this amendment. There is nothing that affects the substance of the principal act. So the principal act remains, and I think it goes back to what we've always contended, that the 2008 Act is implemented as it is right now. However, we felt that it is desirable for us to propose an amendment to Parliament so that we can have the legislation that doesn't have those kinds of things. Okay, these are some of the stakeholders that we have consulted with in this process. And I'm not going to go through them, but like I said, as a department, we do not miss a step in consulting. Sometimes we may be looked at as over-consulting, but we think it is the best interest of this process that we over-consulting. Okay, I would like to thank the committee for the opportunity to present yourself, and we are here to respond to any issues of that patient.
Thanks very much, DDG. If there are any issues for clarification to the presentation, Honorable Lee, you can break the ice, Honorable Lee.
I can, thank you. I'm trying not to use a very sharp pick, I'll be changing. Thank you for those presentations. Let me just say at the outset that we're taking there you are. When you say all concerns, I think it was you or the EDG, I think you said all concerns have been incorporated. It's not 52, and you know it's not 52. They are concerns that have not been incorporated. So please don't misrepresent the situation to the committee. Having said that, I've got a long list, Mr. Chairman, and I need to go through it, so we need a lot of patience. DDG, can you give us a very brief summary of what an existing company will be required to implement before the 1st of April, given that that's the implementation date? So, what do existing companies need to do before the 1st of April? In terms of the postponement from the 1st of October to the 1st of April. I have a different view about the reason for that. Certainly there were requests from business and other stakeholders, but in reality the Act is basically flawed in many respects, and hence the huge number of amendments that are in this bill. And so to suggest to us that the bill will be implemented on the 4th and the 1st of April without these amendments, and that's the kind of information I'm getting from you, is I think somewhat intimidatory, because the Act is, as it stands now, is flawed, and evidence is indeed all the amendments that have been proposed. The switch from Cipro to the Companies Commission, it would appear to us that there's an additional burden that's been put on Cipro, an institution which is not operating terribly efficiently right now. What are the outstanding issues that have to be implemented by the 1st of April in terms of additional staff, the electronic content management software, which has failed us abysmally in recent times? I actually wanted to go onto the website this morning, didn't get time, because when I go on, I put my agent number in, and then kicks me off. And then I go in, and it kicks me off. And this happens on a regular basis. It's from personal experience that I'm talking in terms of. Okay, I don't think there's any point in debating the convicted fraudsters issue. Our position is absolutely clear. It's a life ban unless overturned by the court. Intercompany loans. You haven't addressed this concern. And the Act insists on a members' resolution, majority resolution. And yet companies operate for a holding company to give a loan to a constituent. Loans are an integral part of running any business. And to call a shareholders' meeting to be able to do this is just over the top. And you haven't said anything about that, I don't think. Now, you've talked about how this is going to make it simpler and so on. And I'll read you from the business day yesterday, day before yesterday. Eva van Heerden, National Risk Manager at Audit Accounting Magog. The compliance review contained in the new Companies Act is likely to cost significantly more, not less, more than audits for companies. Ashley van der, Project Director, South African Ministry of Chartered Accountants, SICA. Although a review is generally quicker than an audit, the option is not necessarily cheaper or simpler, given the level of expertise required of the reviewer and his experience and knowledge. So the whole hype around the review versus the audit seems that it's not going to make it any simpler, and it's actually going to cost us more. Your comments on that. The Social and Ethics Committee, you've kind of briefly hinted at this, that companies have this obligation to fulfill certain functions. Yes, indeed they do. We already have legislation in place that controls, as you yourself said, labor laws, environmental acts, human rights, the Constitution. So all you're doing by implementing this Social and Ethics Committee is putting an additional burden on companies. And yet your objective, stated objective, is to make it simpler. And here you're making it, to our mind, unnecessary. We don't have any fight with the objective. All we're saying is that it's already in place through the existing regulation. I know the Act is a new Act, but you know what happens with amendments of Acts, and the Income Tax is a prime example where amendments have been going on since 1962, and you need a doctorate in as a layman, you try and read that Act, it's almost impossible. Are we going to make sure the amendments are consolidated into the Act so that it's readable? Chairman, DDG Yota has correctly pointed out that consultations have been vast and extensive over extended time. My concern is that consultations with this committee start this morning, and we want to pass it tomorrow. That is a failure. Okay, I agree with you that the consolidation of the Act in terms of incorporating closely held companies into it as opposed to closed corporations is a major step forward. However, in practice, hard work, time will tell. I mean, the Closed Corporations Act will now kind of stagnate and remain in place, but only for existing CCs. But I'm going to try and register a closely held company as soon as possible, just to see how it works. But I'm really excited about it. I think it's great. I really do. The rescue, business rescue, you kind of touched on who will be, this profession is going to evolve and become best business rescue expert. I'm sorry, maybe I should have read more deeply in the Act, but can you just tell me who does the appointment? More for my own information. I might have a concern about that. Okay, car value conversion. Talk to National Treasury Revenue. Where's the amendment to the Income Tax Act to exclude the conversion from the tax? We're going to implement these amendments, this bill, and has the Income Tax Act been amended to exclude? And that leads on to my next one. Which trumps which here? The Income Tax Act or the Companies Act? Because it doesn't appear to be on the list, the Income Tax Act. And I would have thought the Income Tax Act would trump the Companies Act. Okay, I thank you very, very much for taking care of the technical insolvency aspect. And just to ask you, in terms of Section 22, paragraph 3, 1, for that it is able to pay debts as they become due and payable in the normal course of business, the Commission may issue a compliance debt. So are we saying that even where we technically insolvent, we have to get permission from the Commission to continue trading? Because that's really very earnest. I mean, I've dealt with businesses for the last 30 years, and I doubt whether there are many of the many businesses who have been my clients who from time to time haven't been technically insolvent. I'd love clarity on that. I mean, I thank you very much for dealing with it. That was great, but I'm just a bit concerned about the onerousness of, you might be technically insolvent for a month and having to get the Commission's permission on that. Chairman, thank you very much for your indulgence, and again, thank you. We're debating amendments here, we're not debating each other's characters, but please don't take anything that I may or may not say as a serious, as a personal issue. This is about people legislation, and we'll go out and hug and kiss after.
Thanks, Honorable Lees, and except the last part, one deal with it. I wanted to give an opportunity because you're going to Honorable Sinclair. If you have some questions or clarity, because you're going to be attending to something else.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. My apologies for the 11 o'clock meeting, but I will be back, it won't be a long meeting. The only concern that I share with Honorable Lees is the issue about the time frame and only coming to the committee now.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, feel the suspicion about the importance of the NCOP, we're just here to do that rubber stamping. So that's my only concern. Mm-hmm.
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 Can you please deal with these questions? There's quite a list.
Looking for a response. I know what the position of the department is. I know what the position of other political parties are. I've heard that the DDP say, yeah, it's a principle thing. So, you know, I mean, if you want to try and convince me, you're welcome. But
but you want to succeed. Now let's leave that aside.
Yeah,
it's
not that principle that they put.
We can debate that much.
Number five, maybe. Intercompany loan. Intercompany.
It's an order, maybe it's really an understanding as a member of the committee from what was said by Honorable, so that they can have a very clear understanding, because I want to participate.
Yeah,
if ever a member is saying Chairperson, we are aware about the position of a particular organization, relation to whatever, and how many questions we have, that must be answered. Because that is critical. You can't make that serious statement, because I thought these are questions that are beyond the department, and the department is going to answer. But once you start making that allegation, then it makes us not to have any question that might be answered. I expect maybe to make a ruling on that.
That
statement is very serious, because we thought we are going to engage.
Yeah, that is why on the issue of political parties, really, it is out on the committee meeting. This is a committee meeting, and Honorable Lee can say his political, you know, standpoint, but not on behalf of other parties like COPE.
Or on behalf of COPE. Chairman, I don't believe I did, and I'm sorry there's not a recording, because I'd like to listen to my work again, but I'm quite happy for the department to think that, you know, to respond to my statement.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. Let's leave it there. Can you say anything that?
Yeah.
Intercompany
loan. In this area, what is happening is that we are seeing in South Africa, we would like to emphasize the issue of corporate governance, where the shareholders are now affirmed to be the owners of the company. Not trading them, but shareholders are the owners of the company. And therefore, when you want to make law, whether you do it for your subsidiary employees, it should be in a transparent manner, and the owner with the shareholder should be involved and pass a resolution to say, yes, I agree with you, or I don't agree about that. And then we thought maybe we are just taking this in from our service. But this morning we googled and found out the British have just implemented the same legislation like ours. A year ago, we should have overtaken them, but because of this amendment, whatever, they have overtaken us. Therefore, the same provision, they say no loan should be given without sanctioning of the shareholder. However, to be honest, they come with some £10,000 loan, for example. That you can do, these are minor things. But the principle is that they don't allow people to enter into loans, and then the shareholders do not pass their resolution. That is the principle. So the issue, the other issue which I think I need to deal with Rory is picking me when to take one.
No, just to add to that particular point about the company alone, is that the legislation does take into account that these resolutions can be passed for a broad European Australia, which means that you don't need to go back and forth requesting intercompany loans or direct loanship in terms of that particular period, but a resolution can be passed by the shareholders that has a period of 2 years that takes effect in four. So there's no back and forth for that. It's called a generalized resolution, which therefore allows for such cutting of the burden as such in terms of calling meetings of intercompany loans. In terms of the issue of what was laid out by the honourable member concerning the independent review and the compliance and the statements as made by cycle members, one must bear in mind that in terms of the whole issue of the implementation of independent review, we've also taken into account the needs of the smaller independent reviews of the smaller companies, and therefore those can be done by members of the CT Close Corporation Accounting Officers, which means it's not confined to the audit. The auditors or the larger institutions, it now has a broad-based requirement in terms of the lesser types of organizations like the company secretarial groups who are also afforded the opportunity to do reviews, the management accountants who are also afforded to do reviews, and therefore that is a reduction of burden. So the current requirement is for a full audit for every company, whether you large, whether you small, and therefore there is a cost count in terms of that. Independent review can be done by lesser organizations, lesser requirements, lesser burden, lesser assurance. As regards the issue about, another member asked about the appointment of the business rescue practitioner. In terms of our amendment, we've done some work around that, and basically what we stated is that there are two ways that a business rescue practitioner can be appointed. The first way is that an accreditation can be given to the body itself, the professional body. So if members belong to the Law Society, for example, and the Law Society is accredited to the Business Rescue Practitioner Forum or Business Rescue Practitioner Professional Body, therefore the members in that particular professional body are accredited as members of the program. The other way a person can be accredited is by an application and license being given by the company's commission, whereby individual applications will then be made, they will be assessed, determined by the criteria as set up by the regulation, and the regulation will determine that one person to be licensed. So those are the two ways. Because the reason why we have the two ways was, for example, and as one honourable member in the previous committee stated, that even though he's an advocate, he does not belong to a body. He does not belong to a body that is credited as a regulatory authority, and therefore he would like, or persons who fall in the same category as him, he would like them also to have the ability to carry out the work of the business practitioner. And therefore we have either belonging to a professional body or licensed individual and a typical practitioner.
Regarding the third reading issue, says whether the income tax or the special legislation is amended. I think we can safely say that the staff and national treasury, they are quite as part of the issue that it impacts on their legislation. And then they gave us advice to amend it as we did now. And then we know that they are doing tax review, but they say they are compatible with what we are doing now. So that's how we can afford to be that for now. And then we're taking it one by one.
Jumping around a bit, but the question of what does an existing company need to do by 1 April? Matter of fact, it's because there's nothing that needs to be done by 1 April. All companies have a 2-year transitional period within which they can consider the existing memorandum and articles of association, which is now until the new act is signed, as it's meant in NRI, and if there are any is in conflict with the current with the new act, then they can change that by way of a special resolution, or they can simply adopt one of the new standard forms of memorandum of incorporation. The 2-year period, within the 2-year period, any existing provisions in the memorandum and articles of association or in the MOI would trump the act So companies have 2 year period within which they can do the adaptation that needs to be done. So there's a real concern on that field for existing companies. The question of the social and ethics committee, it is an additional burden, but it's not what happened when the bond was, the company's bond was passed in 2008. It was at the request of the consultant that this provision was actually included in there, and rather than portfolio committee on trade and industry, and it was approved, and it was in fact left to the regulations to spell out what specifically the functions would be of that committee. While preparing the regulations, it was found that one should have more flesh in the act on such a committee. And that's why this bill now proposed additional requirements regarding the social ethics committee to be included in the act itself rather than in regulation. See what is still outstanding.
Yeah. Why is he still looking for others? This issue of paying all concerns are addressed. Just in fact, we need to say if people raise concerns and then we consulted with them, but we said it would be better to go to cabinet, to go to parliament, and there we will vehemently oppose to some of the concerns. But some of the concerns came from our side were taken on board by cabinet and parliament. Meaning therefore, whatever is raised does not necessarily mean therefore it can be taken into account. It's up to parliament or cabinet. So that is the way how we were waiting with our stakeholders. That issues will be raised and then some may be taken into account, some may be included, but we have been waiting very well with our stakeholders. And we know that the department has completed a lot of some of the issues that we said on our own, we won't allow it to come. So that's how I can, but I'm just painting a picture of things. Because of the good working relationship with business, all of us are competent in this area. So somebody has to pass a judgment, and some of the business was against us, that's the department to consider. So, I don't know. So the other issue is to say this deal and the Act, or the Amendment Act and the Act will be, they be simplified to be understood for us. Simplification of the Act, that is the education and awareness, so that an ordinary person in the street should understand it properly, because it seems that it is true, it will be bad. Yes, we agree that we have a component within the department as for now, even in the committee, the unit that will deal with education and awareness from stakeholders in order to send them back to educate information. So that's how we can talk to this. I don't know whether my colleagues found another issue.
Sure, yes, I think before we need to look at the question of Section 22, the current Act states that you place the prohibition of trading under insolvent circumstances. That was the provision that had lots of concerns raised about it. The Act, the bill has now been amended after consultation with various parties, and I think everybody is now happy with the situation that the prohibition has been removed. It now signals a red light if a company is trading under circumstances where it's unable to pay its debt, not trading under insolvent circumstances. Well, trading under insolvent circumstances, the trade includes technical insolvency as well as commercial insolvency. Trading under the technical insolvency circumstances means your assets are less than your liabilities, but you can serve your debt as they become due. But the moment you start being unable to serve your debt, that's where commercial insolvency enters the picture. And that is now at that point in time that the Commission can actually inquire whether the company will be able to serve its debt in future. Well, otherwise, if it's not the case, the company will have to take steps of either entering business rescue process or the liquidation route. because not being able to pay the debt and publicly stating so is an act of insolvency under the Insolvency Act of Scotland, which can trigger any liquidation proceedings. So, no, the commission will not be required to approve every person, every company who are in trading under insolvent circumstances, in the wider sense of the word, to get approval to carry on trade. It's only those cases where there are commercial insolvency being considered that needs to be looked into. But it's not a prohibition anymore, as you are familiar with the following features that you will carry. It's only a red light that goes on that enables the Commission to inquire the situation.
Thank you, Gigi. Concerning that particular area, there has been an ongoing process now for about a year in Cipro concerning something we call Commission Readiness Phase. There is a team that has been set up within senior management as well as other management staff, and they deal with something called Cipro Transformation to the Commission, meeting the House on a weekly basis. There is a plot of every single process that Cipro is affected by within the new company regime, and therefore the processes have been mapped out, and they have actually in the framework of being tested as we speak. For example, I can say that for the last 2 weeks, we have had major testing on the new website, which has been launched in coming days, from the CIPC, Company Intellectual Property Commission website, and that website is up and running based on the testing that has been done accordingly. In other areas, in terms of organizational readiness, there has been issues of consultation with labor and the movement of staff to various sectors dealing with additional responsibilities, and that has all been agreed to in terms of bargaining council and bargaining chamber resolution, which has been taken, and staffing has been taken and factored in, and also staffing on the board in terms of the movement and the resolution which has been passed in terms of organization strategy for one organization. There are other issues in terms of the development of the system, and the system concerning that. There has been an additional ICT provider which has come on board in order to deal with the transitional arrangements and transitional movement between the current Cipro environment to the new Commission environment, ensuring that what is mandated to be done is up and running by the 1st of April, and therefore taken care of and taken for. I take the view that you want to do a test to see that a company will be incorporated under the new Companies Act, and it will take some show that you can do a test.
Immediately comes on to. So I think in terms of that, I think we we see more benefits that will be accruing effective from the 1st of April, as opposed to obligations that the companies will be required to really do immediately. However, there are certain things like around governance provisions, for instance, the manner in which the directors should, you know, conduct themselves and all of that. Those are things that companies are already doing to a certain extent with regards to following the codes, the team codes and all of that, which is already something that will be a continuation, which is an obligation that companies have to do. So we do not see any immediate disruption of company operations. And again, in terms of just the strategy of the company's commission, which I think will be presented to Parliament, it has been submitted, it has been finalized. One of the key things that we will be embarking on immediately is the educational aspect of it. The assisting companies to be in a position to comply. And I think, you know, our enforcement strategy needs to talk to our compliance strategy. So all of that is prepared in such a way that we will be sequencing, you know, the various strategies that we have, starting from the educational one, leading into the now hardcore enforcement strategy. Which, you know, the hardcore part you obviously would then implement when you are comfortable that companies have been educated, they've been assisted previously, before you can actually start being hardcore in terms of your enforcement. So there is a balance that is given in that sense. But I mean, obviously we share the strategy with you as soon as it becomes available. And in terms of the Social and Ethics Committee, I think I just want to be bold in this one to say that we don't think it's an additional burden, which is unnecessary. And we're saying that because this particular provision came in to say that there may be some instances in a particular sector of the economy or given the size of the company, such that if the companies are not made to adhere to some of the social and ethical imperatives, that the harm to the society might be larger. When the 2008 bill was being processed, examples that were given were in regards to some of the cases around Shell in various countries and all of that, to say, as much as somebody can sit and say, it's obvious, companies know they've got to comply with the environmental whatever and all of that. But if you know that the risk is higher, you might want to put a mechanism in the legislation which will actually, you know, advance that particular mitigation a bit more clearer. So the intention really here was to say that how do you find that balance? And you find the balance by saying that some companies may be required to have a social and ethics committee. This is not a requirement for all of the companies, and it's very clear in the legislation. So some companies might be required, and the circumstances will dictate that. And the circumstances that will dictate that will take into account various factors, including the size of the company, its impact on the wider society, its impact on the economy, such that if it is left without that obligation, you know, the harm might not be mitigated, the risk might not be mitigated. So that is where we are. So we still do not believe that this is an additional burden that is unnecessary. We think that it is in line with what where we need to go as a country, and we want to believe that it is important that we have it there. And the last part that I wanted to also just talk to is that obviously for simplicity, Honourable Liz, we agree with you, the Act in fact will be consolidated, the amendment will be consolidated so that we can have one particular document to read from. But just the last part that I wanted to talk to, just to add to what Rory had said in terms of the readiness. We've also done a skills audit as part of this preparation. We've looked into the functions that this legislation has in it. We've identified those functions. We've identified the current skills that we have. Then we identified the gaps that where we don't have the skills currently within the organization. And we've got a strategy in terms of how we're going to recruit for that skill. And we've also embarked on retraining of specific staff members who are particularly affected. For instance, the phasing out of the Dose Corporation means that we need to retrain people that were waiting on registration processes for those corporations to bring them in line with now the requirements of it. That process has taken. we've been continuously engaging with and training and all of that. And we've applied our minds to this, we've applied our efforts in doing that, and we know that, you know, maybe for the first 2 years of the new entity, there may be some teething problems there and there, but they are not teething problems that will affect the implementation of the service. And we can assure you in that regard. The last part, just to clarify also, just to add to what Cliff said around the insolvency circumstances issue, that the intervention that the commission has, in terms of just, you know, sending a company a notice for the company to say, no, in fact, I can't pay my debt, it's just a monitoring tool that bridges the company regulation framework with the insolvency regulation framework. To say that if our interest as a country is to ensure that companies do not go into insolvency, if that is the intention, then there needs to be a mechanism of detecting earlier when you see that a company might be operating under insolvency circumstances where it might actually not be in a position to pay its debt as they fall due. So you want the commission to play that monitoring role so that where they suspect that a company is doing that, then they can just send a notice to the company for it to actually say, you know, no, in fact, we are able to pay our debt and this is what we can show you. So that then we can be comfortable that companies are operating under healthy circumstances. So it's just an intervention tool. It does not mean that the companies would require the company commission permission to actually do certain things. So I think it's a good intervention and it will complement the business rescue mechanisms that is put in place, but it also, you know, affords that bridging and the linkage between the company law and the insolvency legislation.
I think the team, Honourable Chair, I think the answers have been a very comprehensive and tough list of questions. I think there's a doubt. I'd like to conclude by making this 2 points. The question of the IT system that legitimate concern has been raised, and if I could maybe just inform the committee with the development. As you know, that our investigations revealed, both the Auditor General and our own, that the tender, the Bella IT tender, was irregularly awarded. And clearly in that case, and the court is very clear on this matter, if the process is tainted, the whole tender is invalid. And clearly in those circumstances, even though we needed a modern IT system and so on, we are duty bound to cancel that contract. And we did so. Now, I think that obviously there could have been an easy way out. You could have tried to, but actually I think the minister, with the support of Parliament and Scopa backing, cancelled that tender. Of course, the company that lost out of that was very litigious and went to the newspapers, went to court to try to stop us from cancelling that tender. But I think that clearly we've cancelled the tender. No court has stopped us yet. We've challenged all the sort of interim interdicts, urgent applications in court, and the matter is still now. One of the second interdict or interim interdict is still now in the court's role, but we were also given the problem now of having, in a sense, a cancelled tender. We still have a duty in terms of our statutory and fiduciary duties to see that we deliver that service to the economy. So what we did then, a decision was made and we consulted, Auditor General consulted the parties, but we then proceeded to maintain and upgrade and add especially the security features to the IT system, because as you know there was also the incident of the cyber hijacking. So what we did then, we've now, about a month ago, we signed another service level agreement with existing IT provider Waymark. Because clearly we had to deal with the issue decisively, and the PSA allows one in those circumstances to proceed without going through a normal open tender process, getting quotes, going through all those processes. So we did that and we entered into that agreement with Waymark to upgrade the current system to show that it's robust enough, but most importantly to ensure that the integrity of the information is protected and that we reduce cyber attacks. So at least we doubt that we understand that there was, and we refuse to admit that the system of property wasn't wasn't secure enough, wasn't strong enough, and in addition there's a problem of irregular, but we had to take a clear stand on zero tolerance with regard to corruption. We are also proceeding against Gala IT for the money that we paid during the contract and so forth. We want to recover that money because, as I said, there's zero tolerance for fraud and corruption. But at least the IT system is in place, and we will soon, when the new Companies Commission comes into effect, we are doing an audit of what was done by Gala IT, what still needs to be done, and then we will issue a tender for the complete completion of the ECM system. Fortunately, there's only about a quarter of the work that needs to be done, so that will be done very promptly, and we will have a completely integrated enterprise content management system. So just to reassure you, the final point is that I think, of course, I take the point that one can't, all concerns, we can't have complete unanimity on the legislation, so maybe I should use the King's English a bit better next time. But let's say I think we were, there was substantial addressing of the concerns. But I think the importance, that's the first time we're presenting the committee, I think it's really, there's some problem between the executive and the legislature here. But I think there's another consideration. I think that because this thing has been in play for a long time, as I said, there was postponement and postponement, I think it's very important for the functioning of our market economy that there is also certainty in the regulatory environment. So, and if you keep pushing the dates back and so on, then people lose faith in your legal and regulatory system. So as I said, the 1st of April has been on the books for a long time. As I said, it was postponed 6 months ago. And so I know there is the pressure of the date on the legislature, but what I'm saying is now consultation with the Banking Council, with BUSA, with private companies, and especially because there's no immediate effect on the day-to-day commercial operations of the company. I mean, when the new Companies Act in, the commission will be established as a juristic person, it will have additional powers, but on all the key company changes they must make, they've got 3 years to do the symbols, they've got 2 years in terms of the year end period and so on. So in a sense, I think if we can reassure the committee, the sort of the economy is not going to be disrupted come 1st of April. But really, I think we would like to project an image of certainty to the environment, and that's why we're trying to ask both the houses of Parliament that if we could try, and the President, really, because he still has to make the final decision, to really appeal to the powers. Our role as the department is just to advise. I mean, it's in your hands to pass and not pass the legislation. But I really, our opinion is that if you could bring certainty, I think, first of all,
Honourable Lees, are you covered?
Quickly,
just
I hear what we say about ethics and solvency, but I'm concerned about the risk reading of the Act, that it does require the Commission's authority. That's why I read it to you guys. Am I reading it wrongly? Where's section 22? Sorry, I should have had it open. Section 22. So it describes technical insolvency, and it says that the Commission may issue a compliance notice. So if one goes through the logic, it is insolvent, but it's not commercially insolvent, it's technically insolvent, and under those circumstances, the Commission may issue a compliance notice. So I'm just concerned. I hear what you're saying. It's not... it's an intervention tool rather than an obligation, but yeah, it sounds like an obligation. And then the other thing is, you know, currently we have to report annually about solvency. Technical insolvency happens at random during the year, it's not just the year end. So the Commission won't know about technical insolvency or any kind of insolvency. That matter during in between the reporting period. But the Act requires the company to adhere to the law, and it says you can't trade insolvent. So presumably there would have to be a report to the Commission to say we are now in commercial insolvency. And if you're saying you can't trade under those circumstances, then you've got astray. So you'd have to inform the commission, I assume. And then in terms of technical insolvency, it's saying, I mean, what you're saying is you can carry on trading, you don't need permission from the commission. I'm just concerned that this seems to read as though you do need permission to continue trading if you're technically insolvent. Am I reading it incorrectly? Everyone's nodding, so obviously my King's English is not very good, so just park that one for a second. Well, I just want to look, thank you for the explanation about the tax, income tax. I wasn't happy initially, but you and consolidation. Okay, the answer with regard to the review versus audit, and you're saying, yeah, you don't need to audit, you can use accounting officers. Well, most corporations have always been using the accounting officers. So there's no advantage there to the closely held company from being a CC to a CC. I mean, you've always been able to use the services of an accounting officer as a CC. Now you're no longer a CC, you're a closely held company. You can continue to use those same practitioners. And so there's no real advantage. What we're really looking at is the companies. Who may use an audit firm, and those are going to be more expensive. But as you say, that's the choice. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks very much. As you covered, as you responded to his, not yet.
I'm just worried about the wording here. That's all.
Oh, you're on.
I think there's a substantial issue. I mean, one of the factors, especially the insurance policy issue, which I think
if I may refer with your permission here to say, they installed the 14 just below the middle of the page. And I think it is important here that we read the whole division there next four subjects. I think we can, this has been debated at length, and the Solar Committee supported it quite yesterday. But I think we can, in all fairness now, say that as it stands now, that technical insolvency has been taken completely out of the equation. Why I'm saying that, and pardon me, Chair, for referring now to a specific line in the bill here, and in 945, it is subsection 3. I'm not going to read, but if we do, it tells us very, very clearly that what is it that the company must satisfy to the commission when it comes to meeting the norms that we have in subsection 3? The norm is that the company must be able to show to the commission that it is able to pay its debt as they come to you and pay it. Now, I think you, sir, would agree that if a company is unable to pay its debt, then we're not speaking about technical insolvency. Then we are actually referring to commercial insolvency or possibly insolvency in law. Because if a company is unable to pay its debt, any concerned applicant would be able to approach the court of law and seek the liquidation of that. So we can, with all due respect, I think we can safely say that if we apply that law, we do not have technical insolvency in mind. We are purely speaking about companies who cannot satisfy this requirement in the sense that they are unable to meet their financial obligations. And therefore, are at least commercial insolvency. I hope that.
my difficulty. I understand fully about commercial and technical insolvency, and quite honestly, as due respect, I'm not a member of the portfolio committee, I wasn't at the public hearing, I'm a member of this committee, and I need to satisfy myself that I'm doing the right thing. So my concern is not the definition of them. My concern is whether there is a requirement for a company to get authority from the commission to continue trading it. And ADG has assured me that I'm worried about the wording. I know the intention.
Thank
you, sir. Just to respond quickly to that, I think, we don't believe, obviously, that there is a need for the commission. But I think what is clear here is that if it is suspected, it might come from either another employee in the company reporting to the commission that they feel that this company is not able to meet its debt. And what then the commission can do is to send a notice saying, this is the situation that you suspect. Please respond within 10 days. The company might come back and not give a satisfactory response. Then a compliance notice will be issued for it to cease trading, because actually in law it's not supposed to continue trading. So that is just what this is saying. So I hope that you will clarify the issue. But you also spoke about, Honorable Liz, you spoke about the fact that the independent review, you know, the sole corporation system already allows for that to be done by the management accounting officer and all of that. We do agree with you. However, I think the intervention here, the benefit is that under the company law regime, the way companies, whether big or small or not at that level, who were required to do audit, even when actually it's not necessary. But similarly, under the closed corporation regime, the way companies, closed corporations, which are actually big enough, that should actually be required to do audit because of the potential harm and the potential effect they have on the economy. And they were not required because they are sitting on a regime that doesn't require them. So this legislation actually then brings that into one net and separates the ones that actually should actually be exempted and the ones that should be required to be exempted.
Thank you. That's good. That debate will go on independent review, recognized and other things. So we're not just taking Italy as an example, probably one of the biggest economies in Europe. And then this is like all our accountants, they belong to organizations internationally, which recognize independent review is different from. So that's it. So I think we should go on and on, but it will then take our.
Chairman, may I just say thank you very much for the comprehensive answers to my questions, and I need to satisfy myself, and that's what I'm trying to do. But thank you to you for allowing me to speak.
No, that's fine, Honourable Liz, but as long as all your concerns have been attended to.
I have had responses.
No, that's fine. Some of us have gone through this deal, besides even in committee meetings outside for a number of weeks. So we've been engaging ourselves about this. It's unfortunate that at one stage we didn't invite you to engage on this bill. So we have actually dealt with this bill quite a lot. So we're going to. You wanted to say something? So, in view of the fact that we've got the responses, and we're trying to communicate even with the powers that be. Now, it is clear tomorrow is out, but there is this issue of next week. we still have to finalize on the 22nd or on the 24th, but it looks the 24th that we're going to issue a statement, not a debate, not going to be a debate, according to recent information. So that will be the process. We will now go to the bill. And I've been consulted by some honorable members that we could do it two ways. We could do it section by section, and or we could do it chapter by chapter. I've got the proposal that we do it chapter by chapter, honorable members, in passing and the bill.
Okay. Can I make a counter proposal? Why don't we do it page by page?
Page by page.
It was much quicker over. Okay. The other proposal will be, why don't we take the bill in full as amended? Mm-hmm. But there was no amendment yet at this committee, Chair.
Yeah.
So we can take the bill as full.
Okay.
Proposal I'm putting, Chair.
Okay.
I'm looking to Honourable Nyambi seconding.
Yeah, I'm second.
Honourable Nyambi?
Yeah, I'm definitely saying that there's nothing that is making any other member, if ever you feel that there's something here, but still a chance of us, as we are quite correct to be in the
meeting. So, what the second?
Mr. Chairman, then are you asking for amendment to the amendment?
If you ask for an amendment, okay, we ask for amendment, but then we said to the whole committee must agree to those amendments, or the majority of the committee.
Yeah, absolutely, no, I agree. Yeah. I wasn't aware that was the way it worked.
Yeah, it works that way.
Strange.
Okay.
Well, in that case, we need to propose amendments to the implementation date, and to the intercompany loan, the written requiring members' consent. Be removed, the date be extended by 2 months, that the convicted fraud provision be a lifelong ban, so the three be
supplemented. That's the proposal,
yes.
But I have to get a second for that.
My colleague.
Oh, Abram, second that.
Yes. No, Chairperson, I think I would propose that we take the suggested date of the 1st of April because this thing has been dragging for too long now.
Mm.
And that we should make no amendment as this committee. We should take it as amended in the MA. As you said, you've engaged with this lengthy, so.
But that was the
starting
of my performance.
Chairperson, I agree with Honorable
Maine.
Second.
Second. In view of two proposals.
Mr. Chairman, with due respect to you, you cannot have an amendment to the amendment which is in conflict with the amendment we have to deal with us, the third, and then that in a turn automatically reverts to the what's on the table. So all we have to do is to reject our proposed amendment. That's all we have.
But in terms of procedure.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So we won't, you know, we are here as members.
Mm-hmm.
So a member can, you know, propose one thing and another can propose another.
In terms of meeting
procedure,
you can't. But anyway,
Chair, no, this is a Section 75 bill. As per the Constitution, it is a political party bill, as you say. It's not a Section 76, the provinces must be provinces. So I think, as on behalf of the ANC, we put in the proposal that we reject the amendments by the DA. So I propose that, Chair.
It has been seconded.
Okay.
It has been proposed and seconded. Honorable,
I don't know, Chair, whether allow me an opportunity to comment, because you know, as you said, you have dealt with this political party, and I think I have to remark that it was very procedural, very democratic of you. And some of us had some other issues, but you allow Honorable Dees to have enough opportunity in the department. And I think they've done justice to almost all the issues. And I expected him to change. I was surprised when he was, because Honorable Abraham was convinced that this thing is correct. He was forced to say it. Honorable Abraham.
Okay, I think for us to move forward out of that, I think that proposal has been rejected. We take it as a position that we accept now that we take this bill. This bill is, we actually pass it as it is.
Mm-hmm. Good. Mr. Chairman, what would we say? Our 13 against. Would be reported.
Yeah. No, it's
okay.
Already been recorded. So now, we'll come to this issue that the report of the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations on the Companies Amendment Bill B40B 2010, National Assembly Section 75, dated 16 March 2010. The Select Committee on Trade and International Relations, having considered the Companies Amendment Bill, referred to it, reports that it has agreed to the bill without amendment. Procedurally, on this one, we have to ask for those who actually, you know, support. Those who support this statement. Outnumbered.
No, we knew that all along.
Those against the secretary is voting. Now, in view of the fact that now the majority has voted in favor, now the bill has been accepted in the NCOP. Now, and we will make a statement.
I propose the chair.
Now, I've got someone to propose also.
No.
He can't.
He's against the bill.
It's definitely not going to be a debate.
It's not going to be a debate. It's going to be a statement. Good job. Honourable Adam, you know that identified certain members 53.
Oh yeah.
So I thought maybe Honourable Nyambi would do the statement. Next week, do a 10-minute statement.
I'm disappointed because I told you I was going to deal with it.
So Honourable Nyambi is going to be reading the statement. Thanks very much, DG, DDG, and all the officials and honorable members. It has been tough on this issue, we know, but at least we want to move forward on this issue. Thanks very much.
Chairman, I don't know if it's unordered, but I really do want to thank everyone. I think by and large, 99.9% of this action is a great step forward.
Oh.
I mean, it really is fantastic. A lot of work has been done by a lot of people over a long time on it. And so our concerns about 3 points really should not detract from the amount of good work and the impact it's going to have as we go forward. So from the VA and from me personally, thank you very much to all of you.
We just hope the PMG is capturing that.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. The meeting is adjourned.
No, if it is, I don't have a problem. When I first meet the PMG, you have a problem. You are convinced.
Hey,
come on.
But after that,
you will be first. Come on. There's no more fire.
Oh, no.
Okay, keep it.
No, because it's fine.